Ooh, it's getting a little sensual with the mic. So, before the start of our Rage Quit episode, I would like to tell a little bit about Rage Quit's sponsor. So, welcome to another episode of Rage Quit, the husband and wife duo that discusses video games every week. Rage Quit is sponsored by AFK Clothing Co. Are you a gamer? Do you enjoy games? Then check out AFK Clothing Co. for all of your gaming apparel needs. As I record this, I am sporting an AFK green sleeve baseball tee that I absolutely love and wear every week. We'd never be sponsored by something we didn't like. And if you'd like to support the show, head on over to AFK Clothing Co., link in the description below, and type ASI in the promo code box to get 10% off your next order. As always, just follow the bear, and now on to the show.
There it is.
That or a scream. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome you back maybe a second time around.
It could be, I don't know.
To Rage Quit.
It's so hard.
And that's what she said. Whoa, kind sir. This is a family-friendly show. I like to keep it PG. Yeah, don't burn your iPad. That'd be bullshit. All right, well, welcome back to Rage Quit.
I'm Anthony Schultz.
I'm Ariel Skahulitz.
The dynamic duo, which I described this as in a description for Rage Quit.
Oh my god, did you really?
I had to.
Why?
You're Robin.
Why am I Robin? I don't know.
You can pick whatever Robin you want.
Oh,
that's
my
fair.
God. Dick Grayson.
Yeah, original Robin. Men in Tights.
Whoa. All right, well, what episode of Rage Quit is this?
We're on 17 now.
What? 17 yeah. Episodes with Mothman.
At the beginning of the year, we had our 2019 Game of the Year discussion, mm-hmm. as well as our 2020 predictions.
Yep.
And then we had our kind of like in-depth genre discussion, or micro-genre discussion.
Micro-macro-genre.
I need to know a little about macro-genres as well.
Yeah, a little bit.
FPSs and...
Kind
RPGs
of just dive into a bunch of shit.
Yeah, that podcast really started out as...
Metro...
Just going to be Metroidvania and Soulsborne. And then as we went, I kept remembering other subgenres.
That's what happens when you have a husband like him.
Yeah. This episode, though, is going to be about...
Art style.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about cel shading.
This is where I come into play.
I should have written it down. Thank God I remembered, though.
It's a process of elimination. We figured it out. That's why I always tell you, write it down. You won't remember
it. I know. And I've got, like, AS Inquisitor, like, notebooks of the wazoo where I write, like, everything down. But sometimes I forget. And I don't write it down. I'm like, I don't remember.
Which notebook is it in? Shit!
And then I didn't, but I did. So it's like, which was right? I don't know.
Batman.
Could be.
All right. No, so cel shading is basically the process of flattening... out the artwork with just like bold lines.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's also known as like toon shading.
Toon cartoon shading, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, it's very like two dimensional.
Yeah, it's very two dimensional. It's
usually very colorful, very bright.
Very colorful, very bright. They use,
it can be at least,
like the black lines to distinct, you know, facial features, like use your lips and mouth. You don't shade it.
Yeah, it's not like,
realism.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the best way to put it. It's not going for like photorealistic.
It's not a person.
But it is.
Even though it is a person. So the best game, and we talked about this on many of our shows, is Borderlands, is the known for cel shading.
Yeah, I think that's like the biggest modern franchise that's carried through for more than a decade now. Mm-hmm. That is.
Obviously, there's more genres, and we're definitely going to talk about them, but... Now, you knew this when it started. What was the backlash that they got from it?
Yeah, so this I remember distinctly, like, people being very upset. So there was a really early Borderlands trailer,
mm-hmm.
that was photorealistic.
Yeah.
And it shows, I believe it's Tannis, and she's, like, scarred on her face, and she's, like, narrating and stuff, and, like, you don't see the scarred part of her face,
mm-hmm.
and the camera kind of pans around, and she's, like, telling you about, like, Pandora, or, like, where you are,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a cinematic trailer, and then it pans around, and she's standing on this cliff top,
mm-hmm.
On Pandora, And it was a beautiful trailer, too, especially at the time. I don't know if it holds up or not. I haven't watched it in quite a few years.
Yeah.
But, and then it pans around and shows the scars on her face. And it's, like, very kind of serious, like, mm-hmm. tone to the trailer. Very kind of dark, like, post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
Like, and it was photorealistic.
Mm-hmm.
They even loved it. Thought it was great. Especially at the time, you're talking about, like, early PS3, 360 days.
Mm-hmm.
And the graphical leap from, you know, the PS2 to the PS3.
Was huge.
Yeah, or the original Xbox to the Xbox 360 was big. And a lot of people were looking for just kind of graphical beauties.
Yeah, know? They wanted something out of, you know, square titties. Square titties!
Pretty much. I mean, it's like those early days of 3D with, like, PS1 and PS2. It's like there was a distinct improvement there as well, but it's, you know, definitely not realistic.
No, well, not, like, realism at its finest, but it's
still. But we were getting closer and closer and closer, and I think the first generation that really put us, especially by the end of it,
mm-hmm.
was the 360 PS3 generation, where it was like, wow, these games are absolutely gorgeous. They look like people. There's no blockiness to them. Like,
there's no square titties.
Yeah, and it's. It was interesting, but they decided to change it and make it more cel-shaded.
Mm-hmm.
And I really dug the art style when they did that. I was like, I was already kind of getting tired of us always talking about it needs to be photorealistic, even though it really hadn't happened at the time.
Like, no offense to everybody else, when I want to play a game, I don't want it to be real.
Yeah, it's like there's certain set pieces that I want to be more realistic, like The Last of Us or something, where it's like.
Well, you're dealing with zombies and shit, so.
And
yeah.
It's such a dark story and a dark world, and it's like. It's very serious, kind of like mm-hmm. topics of discussion on top of it. It's like as far from escapism as you can really get.
When I'm playing with a fucking looter shooter and or let's say fucking Zelda of all things, I don't need Zelda to look real. I don't care. He looks like a fucking box.
Exactly, and I think Nintendo's been really good about
keeping it that way.
Yeah, kind of, not necessarily like cel shading all the time, but having it be a little bit more cartoony, which I think that's probably why they get the more family friendly kind of branding.
Yeah, over exaggerated on like big eyes and anime-esque, obviously, because it's Nintendo.
Yeah, and then you get your Mario and your Donkey Kong and your Zelda and things like that. Not hyper realistic.
No.
So, but yeah, when they switched over for the first Borderlands and they started giving teases and like releases of this cel shaded look mm-hmm. opposed to that first trailer they released. Yeah, people threw a bitch fit about it. They were like angry about it. They're like, they thought it was like a cop out, like that it was lazy because it's easier to do cel shading. Like, they're really, I don't remember there being much discussion about like an aesthetic or artistic choice.
No.
And I feel like this happens in all mediums, but in gaming, we like quickly forget how people reacted when something released.
Yeah.
And then we move on and be like, ah, no, I've always been a Borderlands fan. It's the greatest thing in the world. And it's like, I don't know if it's like an age thing or we just quickly forget.
Yeah. Which happens, unfortunately.
A lot of people are just like, we'll quickly forget whether it's like a bad game or a good game. Or like how it was received at the time.
We'll just bitch in this moment.
Yeah.
How fucking dare you?
So like leading up to it until it released, there was just a lot of like complaints and people were complaining about it. In general. Because it was cel-shaded. Like, you have no hint at like gameplay. Nobody's played it.
I feel like if you're not making the game, you can fuck off right now.
Yeah, it's just like people just kind of spun up into this.
Are you making the game? Joe Blow sitting on the couch there, eating your Cheetos, watching porn?
No, you're not.
Yeah, get mad about porn being cel-shaded, sure. But
cel-shaded porn.
Now you're thinking.
That is funny, yeah. That's funny.
But that's the thing, like, where I run into a thing all the time is with art, because I am an artist. And I love, don't get me wrong, I love the realism as well, and I just said this too, but I think cel shading is fucking gorgeous.
I think it's awesome,
and
personally.
It's so much fun. I love cel shading personally with myself. A lot of stuff I paint, I can make it as real as you want it to be, but when I'm doing something fun, like I'm painting Leo's tiny little Pokemon, I'm cel shading that bitch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're getting chunks of color and outline in the black. It's basically what that is.
Yeah. Which makes sense. And for me, like, from a gaming perspective, I think games from especially kind of that early 3D generation, mm-hmm. and then even a lot of older games where they were 3D technology or
yeah.
3D models and stuff, I think the cel-shaded ones hold up the best.
They do.
I think if it's a good game, and depending on the genre, it'll stand the test of time opposed to its peers who have blocky triangle tits, and they're not going to, it's you know? Like, I think, like, Ni No Kuni is one of my favorite RPGs. Mm-hmm. I think that'll last a really long time.
Well, like, even
opposed
like,
to, you know, like, Final Fantasy XV.
Yeah.
Like, which are near even contemporaries. Even if
you,
like,
you think about it, too, even just from the beginning of the PlayStation 4 to now, how many games you can't play because of the graphics or the art.
Or the, yeah, and graphics usually I can get over, but controls in particular, because they were so clunky at the time, mm-hmm. like, I do have difficulties with going back and playing certain
Well, that's modes. A different thing, too. We're talking
usually,
about.
Like, RPGs I can get into mm-hmm. and get my head over the graphical yeah. style of it. But if the, you know, trying to play, like, a shooter, even if it was a cel-shaded shooter from, like, PS1 days would be a little difficult.
True. Well, that's a different topic.
But there is a good shooter, 13, that's cel-shaded that I think holds up a lot better than mm-hmm. other shooters of that time. And I think it's because it's cel-shaded, to be honest. Like, the artwork still pops mm-hmm. for you. It still draws you in. It's got that kind of comic book allure to mm-hmm. it. And then the mechanics are decent
that's
enough that
thing,
you
too.
Can keep
it's,
going.
It's like, people are so happy with comic books and stuff, and that's basically what it was, cel-shading, and people are like just bitching
yeah,
it because...
cartoons and comic books, really.
Cartoons and comic books.
It harkens back to that feeling when you were a kid, for sure.
And I like that feeling. I like that feeling where you're like, oh my god, this reminds me of, you know, cartoons and comics and stuff.
Yeah, whatever cartoons you ran into.
You can still get the realism out of, too, because then we're talking about, like, Tall Tales.
Yeah, Telltale's...
Walking Dead, Telltale's.
Yeah, Telltale's done a, like,
still
a
so
great...
fucking dramatic.
Yeah, and, like, even recently with them kind of reforming, like, mm-hmm. proxy-wise, they just recently released a patch, I think it was for the last Telltale Batman game, where mm-hmm. it's, like, it's still cel-shaded, of course, but it's, like, a noir, like, mm-hmm. style.
Yeah,
well,
they
like
changed it.
Black and white
yeah.
grays, you know, and it's, like, to emphasize kind of that nitty-gritty kind of mm-hmm. Batman detective, you know, comic book, like...
Yeah.
Hook.
Yeah.
I think that's a cool idea. I think that's really clever. Mm-hmm. And I think those games, maybe mechanically, unfortunately, unless they're redone, will struggle a little bit just because of the engine that they were based on. But as far as the art style itself and the storytelling, mm-hmm. I think will last a lot longer than other adventure games that weren't.
Well, it's like if you think about it too with the cel shading, like people that say, oh, it's lazy, oh, it's this, oh, it's that. But it's like you watch The Walking Dead Tall Tales and how it's cel shaded, and I still get a dramatic fucking feeling from that game compared to like it being like in The Last of Us, which is a gorgeous game.
Yeah, they can definitely like still, you can still have like attachment and it can spark emotion and like, mm-hmm. or gut reaction depending on the writing and like the decision making, like in those games. And I think people, like, start to forget that a little bit. They mm-hmm. focus on the, like, the power of the machine or, like, the photorealism.
Which you've done, too, like, even in this conversation a couple times, or, like, you're talking about, like, I like the game, but the gameplay, because it's clunky, is what messes it up.
It's not because of, like, the engine running it or even the platform it's on. Mm-hmm. It's just because of, that's more design.
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
back end for controls, like button mapping, or like if it only had one analog stick or no analog sticks, that makes certain genres hard to play. That's why, like, when I go back and I play older games, RPGs are easy.
Yeah, true.
You don't need a lot of buttons. You know, a lot of, like, choices or how you build a character mm-hmm. is usually kind of squirreled away into, like, inventory management mm-hmm. or, like, skill building. They're in menu systems.
Yeah.
And those menu systems, like, hold up, so that's, like, a good design kind mm-hmm. of thing. There's menus now where it's, like the Outer Worlds, it lags like crazy.
Yeah.
Everyone says it's a really good way to, like, do a menu system and stuff, but I was like, I find it just as bad as a lot of the other menu systems I've dealt with, especially in this generation where it's, like, why does that click a button and go into a menu and there's, like, distinct 5-second lag before I can get to a menu, or I press a button and it doesn't go to the next tab. I have to, like, wait or press it again because I don't know if it's going to work or not.
Then I'm too far in. Yeah,
that's
too far
weird.
Over.
That's kind of what I mean about, like, gameplay mm-hmm. mechanics and stuff. I don't think that's aged because of necessarily the hardware or even how it looks, mm-hmm. like whether it's cel-shaded or not, but the genre and the controller of the time.
True.
That affects that for me.
Well, then, shit, let's wrap all that up in one, then. Let's talk about cheatiness, art, and all of it in this podcast. Make it a long one.
Yep, I'm down with that.
Well, then let's bitch about consoles. Let's talk about them bastards in the which is a bad knocking on my point since we're, you know, consoles are very important. But
yeah.
I feel like for me, there's obviously a bunch of consoles that are horrible. What the fuck's up with the Wii U, yo?
Who knows? Such poor branding. I mean, John and I have talked about that. Like, our co-host for FGG. And he'll come over and stuff. Sometimes we'll do a podcast, sometimes we won't. But we always discuss games. Mm-hmm. Like, that's usually, like, main focus of conversation.
Oh, you do ever talk about it, so I go take a nap.
I know, yeah. And we've talked about, like, the Wii U extensively. And I think he kind of hits the nail on the head there because it's just horrible branding. It's just confusing. Like, you don't know what it is. Like, is the tablet the console? Is it the same? Is it an attachment to the Wii? Is it something more? Is it a separate console? Especially when you get into older generations, like parents buying stuff for kids or grandparents, you know, buying stuff for their children or grandchildren. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, you already have a Wii. Like, you know,
and then they're like, wait, no, but it's different. But okay,
The Wii U is like, oh, do I just need the tablet? Like, are there different games on it, or to kind of play the same games on it? Like, and it's just, there wasn't really a clarity in branding.
So, do you think that makes it a bad console?
Yeah, because I think in that instance, the Switch is what the Wii U wanted to be.
True.
I think either technology or Nintendo's like R&D just hadn't gotten that far yet.
Well,
and it was time for a new console. The Wii had not necessarily overstayed its welcome. It was incredibly popular. And have one hooked up. But I think it was just time for the next one.
I use it all the time.
So they put out the Wii U, and they thought that it was going to be functional enough to satisfy this kind of like hybrid market that now exists because of the Switch.
Yeah.
And it just didn't, realize its own dreams, you know?
Its own dreams.
Yeah.
And it's true, though, because, like, it's hard to figure out, you know, you get gorgeous games, you get the cel shading, which people bitch about artistic style and stuff, and then you get come along the lines of where, just, like, branding name as well, Wii, and then Wii U, it's like,
it just should have been, I think it would have had an easier time. I don't necessarily think it would have, like, rocked the world like the Wii did or like the Switch has, but if they had, it was obviously a blessing in disguise because we got the Switch out of it. The Witch. Yeah, you have it. We got the Switch out of it, which is a fantastic console. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the best. And so it like led to that. So it's like you can't kind of deny the cause and effect.
No,
but if they had, if it had been like branded probably with just better overall like marketing, like commercials or even like traditional print ad and a different name, especially.
It should have been a different name. If it had been
you know, like the Nintendo Wii and the Nintendo Switch and things like that. If it had just been like, you know, some clever play on the word like tablet or something or, you know, because it's like, the Wii obviously was more geared towards like people playing
Mobius or something like that.
Yeah, Nintendo Mobius. Yeah, or whatever. I mean, they always kind of do weird names to begin with, so it's hard to like pick and choose what they would actually decide on.
It's Nintendo.
But it just shouldn't have had anything to do with the Wii. The Switch was already in development.
If you think about it, a lot of their consoles with Nintendo especially don't follow names.
No, and I think that's good. I think you need to go one way or the other. I think Xbox really is the only one that's kind of fucked that up.
Yeah, Xbox. What the fuck you doing, Xbox?
Yeah, because it's
fuck
like,
down, dude.
Everyone's like, well, you know what you're going to get. It's boring with PlayStation. And it's like, yeah, but you know what you're going to get. Like, it's safe for sure.
Oh my God, did you see how everyone, like, freaked the hell out of the PS5 logo being released? Because
it's just the same as the PS4, except with the 5.
And a PS2.
Yeah, and it's like, they're all the same. Like, I don't care about that. Like, but it's very distinctly fifth PlayStation, and there was the fourth PlayStation, there was the third one. It makes it easy. And then in between, they obviously do, like, in PlayStation's case, you know, like a PlayStation 4 Slim or Super Slim or, you know, whatever, Pro.
Yeah, Pro, whatever.
I get that. Put a little subtitle on it, but it's still a PS4.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting. Like, just because you're redressing a gal doesn't mean that it's not a different gal. Xbox though doesn't know what it is like half the time. Like, it's like you get the Xbox, which a lot of people call the Xbox One, because it was the first one, or the original one.
Well, you can do it, because there is an Xbox One.
Yeah, and then they did the 360. I was fine with that, between cool. the one cool. to the other. 360, yeah, cool. Yeah,
yeah. Very I popular console. I feel like they should have expanded off the Xbox 90, the Xbox 45 degree, the Xbox...
I heard, and I never thought of this, and what? I don't know if this would be just, like, a... Like, me in the minority, and I'm like, a lot of other people would have thought of this if it was advertised this way, but they're like, people didn't want to do, like, you know, like, the Xbox, like, 720 or something like that, because they went all the way around again. So they're just, like, back at square one. I'm like, I never even would have thought of that. I would have just been like, oh, that makes sense. Like, 360, 720, like, 1080 or whatever. Then they didn't want to get to 1080, because then they get confused with, like, people get confused with resolution.
I think they just confuse themselves regardless.
Yeah, and so. I was like, I think we're going down the rabbit hole a little too much here. Like
Xbox, pull back. Come on.
Yeah, I feel like they could have kept with that, and it would have been interesting.
Well, they could have even done an Xbox One, Xbox Two.
I mean, eventually...
Xbox 4, Xbox 5.
It would get a little wonky, because then you'd be like, you know... whatever degree measurement you would use would be like... You know, like the Xbox 2408 or something like that, and that would get weird. I get that. But I feel like they could have written that a little while.
Yeah.
But yeah, to go to the Xbox One after the 360 when there's already an Xbox One, and then now it's like, what, the Xbox Series X?
Yes.
And the X is probably just like a variable and will be a name, and they'll have a whole bunch in that series.
Yep.
So it's like, so we don't really know what the name
of
the console
is? I'm going to laugh. It's going to be Xbox Series X One.
Yeah.
For their pro or whatever.
That would be really funny. Because then it's like, now you're mixing so many things together.
Now you're just fucking
shit. Some people just say now, like, the, like, OG Xbox.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Yeah, that's like,
Ugh, you make my brain hurt. All right, back to talking about, well, all the names are just shitty. But,
Well, like we said, we're talking about...
consoles and... remotes and stuff.
Yeah, and the shittiness of them.
This is where you lambast the Switch.
What about... Oh, with the Joy-Cons and stuff? Yeah, so controller's definitely, like, a big thing. Like, I kind of complained about that.
Monkey paws.
We were talking about cell shading and how that bled over into different genres of, like, different ages.
Yeah.
And, like, if the controllers are crap, I have a hard time playing them. Mm-hmm. The controls are, like, rough. Yeah, the Switch, definitely. Like, the Joy-Cons, like, just don't work for me. I can't do it. Like...
Why?
Well, it's just... I don't know. It's like, the button mapping's not too far off from... Yeah. And then it has all the same amount of buttons, too. Yeah. As, like, an Xbox controller or a PlayStation controller. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's just too small. Like, it wants to be a handheld, but it's not small enough to do that. Like, a Vita or a PSP, which I have, like, no issues with.
Mm-hmm.
As a side note, though, the Vita not having two sets of triggers in the back is annoying, and the PSP only had one analog stick. That was super annoying. I had trouble playing some games. Like, and again, some genres didn't work on those handhelds, like first-person shooters without two analog sticks. Yeah, no, it's not going to happen. But having a pro controller that you gifted me for Christmas, like, is fantastic. I can play it like any other game
now. Yeah.
The Nintendo Switch. And so it's great, because it's like... It's got the inverted analog sticks like a Xbox, which I'm not terribly used to, but I have played an Xbox, and that's a very common controller type. Sony's really the only one that doesn't do that. And so it's just, it fits in your hand better, like the functionality is better, it's got programmable buttons. Yeah, it's great. Like, I enjoy playing it that way. I think the Switch is just too big for the Joy-Cons, and then it makes it difficult to play with multiple people.
Yeah, well, we found it, too, which kind of pissed me off, because you could play the Joy-Cons on, let's say, Diablo.
Yeah, you could each have a Joy-Con and play Diablo 3
just fine. But you can't do it
fine.
With Minecraft.
Minecraft, no, you have to either have two sets of Joy-Cons or another
controller
and
Joy-Con.
Set of Joy-Cons.
What the fuck's up with that shit?
It's really weird, because Diablo is a very, like, complex RPG, action RPG.
And but we could play with itty bitty little controller.
But Minecraft, you can't.
But Minecraft's like, nah, bitch, you gotta get another controller. You ain't playing me.
Yeah, it is really bizarre. Yeah, controllers, and I've actually been thinking about it a lot more since you got me that controller for the Switch.
Because you didn't realize it, though.
I didn't really think about it so much. I remember, like, my PSP and Vita kind of argument.
Well, yeah,
like,
it makes sense.
Because
they're legitimately missing parts.
Yeah, and it's like, but they're smaller on handhelds and on the go anyways. And I was like more fine with it. But I like to play my Switch on the TV in the living room.
Yeah. Like, you'll play handheld when I take the TV over to play on the Wii.
Yeah, and I did that just the other day where I was, like, trying to... I've been using the controller for the past, you know, 3 weeks, and tried to use the Joy-Cons and play the Switch in handheld mode, and I was, like... my head, for whatever reason, could not... I play all sorts of different games throughout the week for streaming purposes and then, like, on my own, just for content creation. And I can... I can... My mind will easily jockey back and forth between all these different control setups. Between all these different games.
Mapping and setting up. And...
Going from Yeast 8 on the Switch with the Pro Controller to Yeast 8 with the Joy-Cons in handheld mode, like, broke my brain. I could not remember what buttons did what and how they functioned. Even though it has the buttons in the same spot and the same amount of buttons, I was like, I don't remember anymore. Like, I just forgot. I was just like, nope. Brain's like, peace.
Peace, I'm out of here,
homie.
So
I struggled to, like, play. That's hilarious. Just for a little bit on the Switch and handheld mode. But switching back to the Pro Controller, I was like, yeah, this is how it's meant to be played. This is great.
It also plays into another factor, too. Does the Xbox controller still take batteries?
I think it does. It might have recharging batteries now. The thing, though, is... The Xbox does have better controls overall compared to Sony.
Well, it's because you play and they have the Switch, though, because of the back.
Well, device. And they've always had Pro controllers and stuff, and, and they're designed with ergonomics in mind. They have been for a long time. They're comfortable. The battery pack thing is weird. I'll give you that. Like, they should just have automatically recharging batteries like Sony does. Yeah. I don't know why they don't. Yeah, the form factor is great on it. The button layout is almost identical to... It is identical to the
Switch,
the Switch Pro controller, and it's nearly identical to the Sony, like, DualShocks. But, yeah, I think this is where Xbox takes the cake in my head for consoles, is their controller in particular. They have a better controller out of anybody.
Just because I think about, obviously, the comfort ability and the playability as well.
And they have the, like, 4 programmable buttons on the back, Switch has the 2, at least. Sony's never really done that. No, they have an add-on coming out now for the PS4 controller where you can do that.
That's gonna be weird.
Which is weird. Yeah, it's like $30. But instead of releasing a Pro controller...
But you just reach a control.
And I don't think they want to because it's the end of a generation, and the PS5 is going to have those already built in. So they're like, we want to bridge the gap between the PS4 and the PS5 controller without releasing a Pro controller.
Well, that makes sense too, then, because where the hell are you going to make your money if you release it and they can play on both systems?
Yeah, true. And you just might as well have either. They should have just put out a Pro controller years ago. Now by this point.
Yeah, but...
And they just didn't, and then...
I think they're just sticking it to the man, which is
kind of, yeah, a little bit.
They're like, we're not going to follow.
I am interested in the back two thing, because of the Switch one, though.
Ooh, calm down now. Mothman, no!
Mothman, no!
But it's just crazy to see so many generations of consoles, and now let's talk about the really shitty old ones.
Yeah, so... We talked about the Wii U, which I think that's most recent memory for sure.
Tangential.
Yeah, then we started talking about controllers and stuff.
We fucked up. Anyways, back.
Sega Dreamcast definitely bombed hard. They pulled that super early. Yeah, I'm a big Sega guy, so I'm very happy to have a Sega Dreamcast. There's a lot of good games on there. Not a ton, I would say, because they just weren't around long enough to have a ton of great games on it. Sega Dreamcast in particular is a good console.
The controller is so weird.
The controller's bizarre, yeah, because it has, like, the memory pack built into it.
Yeah.
And you can pull it in and out, and it has its own little screen on it, which is weird.
Can you connect that one to the interwebs?
Yeah, so Dreamcast you can play online. There's still Quake servers, like, private Quake servers, and people play Quake on Dreamcast. I don't know, if it's a private server, they're privately funded and hosted, too.
That's what I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, somebody's paying, like, a server fee, you know, every month, so they can... Keep playing Quake.
On the Dreamcast.
Yeah, on the Sega Dreamcast from 20 years ago, which is crazy. That controller is weird.
It is so weird.
Another
one, I like the 64 system, but the controllers...
I hate that controller.
I know you hate it. I love it.
I see it, and I didn't grow up with one, though. I played GoldenEye 64?
Yeah.
Yeah. On
the other system.
No, I played it on the 64. Yeah. I had a friend of mine when I was in junior high who had a N64. Mm-hmm. And we'd hang out and stuff. We'd have, like, a group of us. Yeah. There was, like, at least usually four. Sometimes it was just him and I. But anyways, that's what we did. We'd play GoldenEye all night. So it's like, I do have experience with that. Always cheating
at the golden gun shooting through the goddamn window. You bitch! You can't shoot through the window! Quit that's cheating!
Funny. Yeah, I played, like, later Bond games on, like, the PS2.
Yeah.
That I really
but
enjoyed.
I actually like that. And which is why my
controller is so
I love
weird
that controller. And it makes it easier for me to play the Switch controllers.
Oh, yeah.
I got little hands, though, too.
Yeah, for me, it's just, like, button layout, even on the same amount of buttons, and the size. This is a little too small for me. For, like, a plain
aspect.
You know, on a big screen. Like, true. Like a home console. It's just difficult for me to, like, get into. But, yeah, the Sega Dreamcast, I think, way too ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Especially with, like, connectivity and stuff in 2000. And
you had dial up back then that day, yo.
Yeah, exactly. And like playing games online really just wasn't a thing yet. I mean, it just wasn't. And then on top of it,
could you imagine if they released Dreamcast today? Obviously, revamped it for people, but
oh, like a very like a super modern console, but yeah, like a bird, like a Sega Dreamcast 2 or something.
Yeah,
that would be cool. That would be rad. I'd totally be down with that. Yeah, it was like on par with you know, even just the PS4 and the Xbox One, but
that's Sega. What I mean. Sega.
That'd be so
come
trippy.
Back. Come back, Sega. We miss you.
Yeah, I don't have enough money to even do that now. No way. but they screwed over consumers because it was like they came out like back to back to back with consoles. They tried to get the Genesis to last forever with these add-ons.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, I mean, you got to think. So you get Sega Genesis, which was already kind of underpowered, but on par with, like, Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nintendo after that went to Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
Sega, and then the GameCube.
Yep.
We'll draw it out to that. When the 64 came out, you get the PS1, and then the GameCube, PS2.
Yep.
So those kind of all line up. Sega went from, like, Genesis, and then Saturn to Dreamcast.
Yeah.
So it's like Saturn, but the Saturn came out way too late because they were adding on all this like weird shit to the Genesis to make it last longer and longer and longer. And then they like pushed out a console and it didn't do too well because it was PS1 and 64.
Yeah, the heights of the
and then it was Nintendo like Sony's Dreamcast, game. You know.
When did Microsoft come out?
Their generation was like PS2. So it was PS2, GameCube.
That's so weird that they had
and Xbox.
If you think
that was that's where Xbox started, but it was the second iteration for the PlayStation. And then
wasn't Microsoft mainly on PC for the longest time?
There's a software company. Like, that's where they really, that's their bread and butter, is software. It's not just hardware, per se.
No, but it's just so weird that, not for granted that they came out with the hardware, Sony was just fucking TVs.
Fair enough.
It's just weird to think that they were literally in their second generation. They're like, hey, maybe we should get on this bandwagon. And then here comes the Xbox.
Sony did the same thing. I mean, you gotta think. Because the TurboGrafx 64 released in there. The Atari Jaguar. Like, there's weird fucking consoles in the 90s. Like, you had
the
a lot 90s, of people.
We don't talk about that.
We had a lot of people, like, or companies, like, competing for the same space. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Sega came out against Nintendo as, like, the cool kid in the block. That's why we have Sonic and shit like that. They want to be the cool gamers. Like,
now everyone Sega. Hates Sonic.
Yeah, pretty
except
much.
Except for baby Sonic.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
But then PS1 came out and was, like, obviously a direct competitor to the 64.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up doing better than the 64 just because they had
instead of cartridges.
And Nintendo didn't want to stray away from cartridges at the time.
But then they did the GameCube, and then they had their mini discs.
They had their mini discs, yeah. The PS2 was the first
one to play Blu-ray DVDs, isn't it?
Not Blu-rays, but DVDs.
DVDs.
It was a cheap DVD player.
Yeah.
So a lot of people
you know, just think of the phrase you just said.
Cheap DVD player, yeah.
On the PlayStation.
Because it was the PlayStation 2.
It was a cheap DVD player. Just let that wrap in your brain.
Because
now
you could, like, go find one in your dumpster, but
seriously, I'm just saying though, it's like, and then if you think about the Nintendo still does, they did the little disc on the GameCube GameCube.
Yeah, they were like the mini disc, like
the mini disc, just kind of a fuck you, look, we did discs, and then went back to cartridges.
No, they did discs for the Wii. The Wii has discs, because that would have been after GameCube.
The Switch.
I don't know what the Wii U had, but now the Switch has cartridges.
Again.
And there's a lot of companies talking about going back to cartridges.
That's so cool to think, though. I forgot the Wii U.
Because they're solid state, they don't move, they can hold a lot of data nowadays. Like,
but they're not breaking parts, and which what the Nintendo were saying, this is what's going to be it.
But it was the opposite problem then. So all the other companies switched over to like disc-based formats because you could hold a lot more. At the time, you couldn't on
cartridges. That's what I'm saying. They're saying that it's going to eventually be equal.
Yeah, but are you going to ride it out for 20 years and not produce what people
Nintendo's
want?
Nintendo's going to do what Nintendo wants to do.
Yeah, and they did. And the 64 is insanely popular.
And then they're like, a big old fuck you, we're back to cartridges again.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Sony went down the same path with their handhelds. Mm-hmm. So with the PSP,
the fuck is that little thing? You can't open it. I don't know.
Thought they did. I almost, the very first PSP game I almost destroyed the case because I thought you pulled out that mini disc. I thought it was a case for the mini disc.
Because like the GameCube has the mini disc.
And and it's like, oh no, you keep it in that little white case and you pop it in. And they called it was a UMD, a Universal Media Disc. And they thought it was going to like catch on like wildfire.
Nope.
Yeah, no. And then the Vita has cartridges.
You know how many people freaking destroyed those fucking discs trying to open them thinking...
At first, sure.
Oh, yeah. You know for sure.
Probably. I almost did, and I was like, this is not coming apart. I don't think you're supposed to do this. And then I think I just tried it out and, like, popped the whole thing in. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. Thank God I didn't ruin that. Yeah,
And then people could, break it, hack the PSP, get unlimited games.
Oh, yeah, that was the big thing with the PSP. That's why it was so popular and sold so well, is because you could easily, you can homebrew like crazy on it. Mm-hmm. Same with the Wii, you could homebrew, so it's like you could emulate almost any game that you wanted.
Yeah,
and just play whatever you wanted. That's why people have Raspberry Pis nowadays. But
the fuck is Raspberry? Oh my god.
It's the genre discussion all over again.
It is. What's with the names?
Sony's kind of downfall, though, was definitely, like, they dived too heavily into proprietary tech. Yes. So
and
it's
the
like,
PS3 came out.
Yeah, which is, like, a first, like, commercially available Blu-ray player because they are indeed that.
Yeah.
It's, like, Blu-rays wouldn't exist without Sony. Like, period. Like, or it would have been far off.
Mm-hmm.
Xbox had UHD DVDs, or what was it? Ultra high def DVDs? I think that's what it was.
Yeah, UHD.
And they had a whole separate like format and stuff. And eventually like Xbox had to like relent because they were losing
money
on it because people may not have been buying it because the PS3 had a rocky like start.
Mm-hmm.
But also released a year after the 360.
It was super expensive.
They eventually had to like go to Blu-rays. Like the Xbox One plays Blu-rays, so you know that there's a backdoor deal there where they have to pay Sony money to use that technology. Because you know that's proprietary, and because they invented it and patented by Sony, which is
hilarious if you think about Xbox, the backdoor paying money.
Pretty much, yeah. And then by the end of that console generation, the PS3 had outsold the 360, which nobody expected.
No, because it took such a rough start because it was too high-tech at the time.
It was too expensive, too. It was like $700 for a console. Yeah. It was ridiculous for a PS3. 360 was like normal, you know, $400 or $500 or whatever.
Yeah, it was ridiculously expensive. And then they came out with the Slim, which kind of counteracted that. We dropped it in a price.
And that would probably, the PS3 would probably be Sony's like biggest failure console-wise. Besides all their kind of like weird proprietary stuff for their handhelds.
Well, that's more the Asian thing going on there.
Yeah. The PS3 was like notoriously difficult to code for. Yeah. And so like game developers had a hard time.
Well, if you think about it too, another thing, Nintendo's always been more known for their handheld games.
They dominated the handheld market for sure.
And always have dominated the handheld market, like with the DS, the Game Boy. I remember my first Game Boy Color.
Yeah, and I had a Game Boy Color because there was no other handhelds. Like, no, there was like, if you wanted to play handheld games, you played Game Nintendo. Boy.
Yeah, you had Nintendo.
I had the turquoise Game Boy Color.
Mine was green. So that's why the Switch is such innovative. Like, this is what we talked about, the Wii U wanted to be. And
they just weren't there tech-wise, or they just bungled marketing so hard that it just...
It's kind of flopped. But then you get, like, the Switch Lites, which are hilarious. They're basically their new Nintendo DS.
No, yeah, pretty much. Like, they kind of cornered themselves out of the handheld market by doing a hybrid console.
Yep.
And I think Alienware, I just read an article the other day, is doing like their own version of the Switch.
Yeah,
that's like PC based. Same kind of setup. It's like a hybrid where you can use it as like a traditional PC almost gaming wise by hooking up to like a TV or a monitor. But you can have it on the go as well.
Fucking goddamn thing, PC bitches. What's we're talking about? The PC flopped. What's the one that flopped?
The Steam Box.
Yeah,
where it's like,
someone bought a Steam Box controller or whatever.
Yeah, I thought that was really weird. They bought a Steam controller, and Steam is huge and super influential in like PC gaming spheres. But it was, yeah, I thought that was bizarre that now they bought a Steam Box controller, and then I remember they didn't like really double down into the console market by just putting out a like singular machine at the time. And then making it iterative, like Xbox, Nintendo, and Sony have done.
Yeah.
And there was like, oh, you can choose like 12 of these. They were pretty much just prefab PCs you could buy. So I was like, well, why would I do that when I could just build my own PC that would be way more powerful?
And exactly.
Only be a couple $100 more. Like, what's the point? And why would I use that controller? If I build my own PC, I can use any controller pretty much.
Ah.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really make sense. I was like, I can use my PS4 controller with my iPad now. Like, there's no point in
that is so weird when you play it like that, though.
It is weird with the remote play.
Yep. It's cool to see, but it's weird. And it's funny to see just, like, the huge advances and obviously the ones, you know, the ones we shall remember that have just died out because either too advanced.
Yeah, like, Sega had screwed over consumers for a long period of time, and then you get the too advanced Dreamcast. Wii U didn't know what it wanted to be, and it was mixed marketing.
And then you get the ones that are like, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah, like, and then you have the Ouya, which is a prime example, which that's finally, like, dead and gone, thank God.
Right, finally.
That had a kind of an interesting premise, too, because it was a Android-based, like, micro console.
Yeah.
Built more for, like, on PC kind of architecture, like Android. And it was going to be for, like, smaller games or, like, indie games.
Yeah.
I feel like the only thing we got from that was Towerfall. Towerfall Ascension probably breaks my... It does it. Like, maybe it actually does. Top 10 list for, like, last 10 years of games. Because I play so much Towerfall Ascension with everyone. So.
You do. That's, like, the one...
That's the only, like, that's like great thing that
when
came
when you're bargaining, you come over. You want to play some Towerfall?
Yeah, let's drink and play Towerfall. Right. Okay. Yeah, and everyone loves Towerfall, so it's, like...
You play Towerfall. Everyone's good at Towerfall. Which is funny. But then if you think about it, like, which brings us full circle back to, like, the artwork, too, where a lot of gamers have the specific art styles and the self-shading and bitch about it, but then, you get the consoles and you bitch about it and what works and what doesn't work, if it's pretty, if it's ugly. And it all ties into it, too, because, you know, when people are bitching about the PS5 logo, it's just PlayStation 5. It's a fucking PlayStation 5. I don't know what to tell you.
Exactly. Some other kind of big flops, though. So you get the TurboGrafx-16.
What the fuck is that?
This is kind of a niche console, too, but I do remember it. I know people who have, like, played it and had it, like, growing up. So it released in 1989, and it was simply just called the TurboGrafx.
I wasn't alive then, so that makes sense.
16-bit. It was the first, actually, 16-bit console released.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of interesting. It was ridiculously expensive.
Oh, probably back in the 80s.
They had quite a few different, like, models and stuff for it. Let's see if it has, like, price point here.
You know, if it's expensive in the 80s, it's going to be fucking expensive.
Oh, yeah. I'll just do, like, a cursory, like, search. There's very few people who played that. The TurboGrafx was just a weird one. It was, like, notoriously expensive, and it was kind of early to the game for 16-bit consoles. But it has kind of a unique place in, like, gaming history. Yeah, so at the time, I don't know how much this would be now, but it was $400.
Holy shit, the 80s, that's expensive.
Yeah. So, like, how much, that's like a, we'll just do NES, actually.
What?
NES price point. $179.99 for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
No, I'll look at the Super Nintendo, so we have kind of like either side of the TurboGrafx.
Jesus Christ, that's a lot of money back in the 80s.
$400, yeah. That's the $700 PS3 right there.
Yeah, pretty much $400.
And then $199 for the Super Nintendo.
No, that's not bad.
That's closer.
That makes sense because I bought...
So, like, half the price for a Super Nintendo. And then TurboGrafx, which was
$400. And everyone already knows...
In 1989.
And everyone already knows Nintendo and shit like that. And...
Exactly. They already have a pedigree. Like, you know... Mm-hmm. What you're going to get out of it, what characters, what, you know, you're going to get Mario, you're going to get
Zelda.
Especially with the Super Nintendo. The other kind of big one that I can think of was the Atari Jaguar.
Which we talked about briefly.
Yeah, most people know Atari for the 2600, of course, because it was, like, back in the day, it wasn't the first, but you had, like, the Commodore 64, and you had the Atari 2600, and, like, you played Pong on your Atari, you know. And it had the wonderful wood paneling on it.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's so great. I loved it. Supposedly they're working on like a niche, like high-end version of like Atari that's going to look like that, but be modern like components.
A
boutique item, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
And that released in 1993.
No, I have two.
So, and it directly competed with the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis.
Oh, God,
and
yeah,
no
screwed.
One remembers like the Atari Jaguar.
It's SOL. It was shit out of luck.
But yeah, that's another one where it was just,
it didn't quite catch it. Do you ever feel like some of these, like, poor consoles, if they would have caught on, would have been just, like, lit? Like, if, like, let's say the Dreamcast would have, like, caught on?
Yeah, I mean, if the story had gone a little differently, where it was, like, Sega had just kind of...
Actually
done what Nintendo was doing.
PlayStation was doing.
Yeah, even PlayStation starting up at that time, you know, in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
If they hadn't, like, been so attached to the Genesis and then maybe done, like, the Sega Saturn and then, like, competed hardware-wise and, like, marketing and they brought, like, kind of a new age of Sonic with and, like, started expanding and stuff. And then you got the Dreamcast to... a point where it could directly compete with the PS2 and the GameCube.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would have been a game changer. I think they'd still be in the business, and I think it was, like, it was ahead of its time, and there's a lot of, like, good games that came from it.
Yeah.
Like, Shenmue 4 just came out after all these years, and that started on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, which is crazy to think that. It started on the Dreamcast, and it's coming to the PlayStation now.
Yeah, and that released, like, in last November, and they're talking about doing more, and there was a lot of people who were very excited about it, and it's, like, after all these years, you know, a franchise that started, there was, like, quite a few fighters and stuff, fighting games that started on the Dreamcast that did really well. Obviously, there's still Quake servers going live.
It fucking blows my mind, yo. So I know we've kind of veered off, and our initial topic was starting off with cel shading and artwork, people bitching about that.
We kind of had, like, a plan, though. We wanted to talk about maybe a very specific, like, art style and then get into gameplay mechanics or, like, kind of the weirdness of that, depending on the generation, and then kind of, like, widen out to, you know, console flops or favorites or ones that have been forgotten about in the annals of time, and then kind of, like, shore it all up and wrap it up with how we began and maybe talk about... you know, camera angles and stuff, and, like, the programming side to that, or, like, lighting, or, you know, again, gameplay mechanics and level design, but on a more smaller scale for these consoles.
Yeah, and I think a lot of consoles, the tough part is obviously with camera angle and stuff, and where you get stuck, because you're not moving the camera. So, I know you and I have talked about this before.
Yeah.
With me, I don't mind controlling where I look.
But
not necessarily.
But not both. Not camera and movement.
In movement.
Yeah.
Because that makes me queasy.
You'd rather have, like, a fixed camera that, or, like, yeah, maybe a fixed camera that, like, just moves.
Moves, yeah, where I can look down, pretty much,
like, almost like,
almost.
Not this far, but, like, I've been playing Devil May Cry 2 on the Switch.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't control the camera on that.
No.
It does the sweeping vistas on its own.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Dante gets really small depending on
how far we're going.
But I'm not
stuff.
Controlling, really, moment-to-moment camera angles.
And it's, like, I can play, like, again, coming back to Zelda, it's, like, I don't control too much of the camera. I look in certain places and can move it, especially if I'm, like, scrolling on a wall. Okay, I need to adjust the camera a little bit. But it's very fixed camera motion.
Yeah.
It's not where I'm playing, where we play,
like, limited movement.
Call of Duty, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm angles and cameras, I'm at the ground, I'm shooting to the left, what happened?
Well, and I think with I think that's why some people just don't like shooters, like, in general, is because...
You have to do both.
You have to be very quick, reaction time-wise, especially if you're playing online.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be accurate in the sense of not just drawing a bead on the, you know, another moving, living character or person that's being controlled by somebody else, but you have to make sure that your movement corresponds with that, as well as the camera angle all at once, which can be daunting. Which I think for... like a lot older generations, it's difficult to play those kind of games.
Yeah, and that's what makes it difficult for me too. It's like
knowing that you're pretty much, it's like ostensibly in that way, are controlling two characters at the same time. One is an omniscient being that's observing everything, the camera, and the another is the what you're playing as, and your brain has to separate those two and control both simultaneously.
My brain don't work that way.
Yeah, it is difficult. For me, I first-person shooters actually used to be my favorite genre. And I loved, like, Medal of Honor. I played really old Tom Clancy games. Like, Rainbow Six was a big one. There was, like, Rainbow Six Lone Wolf and stuff on the PS1. And, yeah, it's like, I strayed more and more away from that, but it was, I have a hard time playing those now. Like, I will get motion sickness. But that's like the graphics combined with those two motions.
So do you think like...
It was really early. So at the time it looked gorgeous and great. And it was like your mind had an easier time wrapping around it. Going from something that's like super, super realistic to that is difficult. Even though it's like relatively the same controls. Like they're a little more fine tuned now, but...
Well, you think too is obviously things have graduated and gotten better. What games do you feel like art style and control wise will always just be an amazing game to play?
So I kind of touched base on it a little bit. I think RPG mechanics wise holds up just in general very well. So if it's a really good RPG, you know, if you start looking back at the Final Fantasy series or even I've even played some like more obtuse ones like recently, especially with the Switch, but like Breath of Fire. Like I started, that was an RPG series I never got into. It's really old. It's, you know, kind of top-down 16-bit style. It's still playable. It's on the, like, online, like, the Super Nintendo online store or whatever for the Switch. And they even have other RPGs on the NES side of it. But I could just dive into it. I was like, oh, fine. If I tried to play, like, which I never played that game before. It was just... She's like, oh, okay, I get this. Like, I understand, like, what's going on. And I could play it. I wasn't getting sick or anything. I wasn't getting frustrated. Like, I don't know where to go or what I'm doing. Like, I can do it. If I threw in, like, Medal of Honor now on the PS1, which I played a ton of and loved absolutely. You know, I played it through and through. I'd have trouble swinging it. It's just the mechanics just wouldn't hold up. So I think RPGs, just as a genre, hold up best over time.
I think for me, again, this is going to come to my Nintendo aspects, like Zelda. I can always fucking play Zelda.
That's RPG.
An RPG and stuff. And just mechanics, the fact that I can somewhat control the camera, but not really. It's just more to move it so I can look up or, you know, down or whatever.
I think that's why I like Super Mario World so much, is because that's like the earliest platformer I can think of that like holds up. Like the mechanics are still really good. Like it looks pretty, because that is cel-shaded too. And it was just kind of, like, rare to have a game like that that would last for so long. But it's like, I play Super Mario World probably once a year. Like, and I just really enjoy that one. I think it's awesome. And it, like, I can play just fine. I'm not getting sick. The artwork looks really cool still after so long. And then mechanics-wise, it just holds up. Art style-wise, I think, to bring it full circle, like, cell shading just works. Like, it makes it last a lot longer. So I think, like, games like...
Because they're not trying to have an Arendaro titties.
And I think...
You get nice titties. Have you seen Mad Moxie?
I just did a quest for Mad Moxie. I was like, oh my god, Moxie, Jesus. Tits galore.
Moxie! But I'm just saying, you get nice titties.
But, that cell shading along with like sprites and like 16-bit, 8-bit stuff, especially like in RPGs, like playing Breath of the Wild, like I found that pretty. Or not Breath of the Wild, Breath of Fire is what I meant to say. Breath of Fire holds up really well. Unlike the really old Final Fantasy games, which are, you know, the sprite based and stuff, that artwork holds up. Like you get into, I really like the stories, and they're some of my favorites, like mm-hmm. Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9.
It's a little janky.
Oh, that's
fine. God. Oh, God.
But the mechanics, because it's an RPG, hold up.
Mm-hmm.
But aesthetically, they're a little rough.
It's like, a little rough.
The parts that I find the prettiest in that game are like the hand-drawn painted backgrounds.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but the 3D sprites themselves and the anything
they're
that's
rough.
Like animated kind of a thing that's 3D rendered, they're really rough. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you can count the polygons.
One
polygon. But if you play Final Fantasy VI and then prior, it's like it's all the sprite 16-bit kind of.
And then when you're actually after you're talking or you're in a cutscene, they're the big people.
Yeah, it'll be more, again, animated and stuff, which is closer to, like, cel shading. And
but it's cel shading. It's like a cartoon. It's like a comic. It's what
and
it's
just
meant
lasts.
To do, and it lasts.
Like, you can go read, you know, a Green Lantern comic book from the 80s. Like, you can go all the way back and read, like, this is a better example, Wolverine, when he first started.
Yep,
it's
exactly.
Like, he premiered in The Incredible Hulk at the very end of the 70s and had his four-part in the early 80s. You can read that just fine.
Yep.
Like, and you can look at it and appreciate it from an aesthetic or an artwork stance just fine.
And
that
like
comic book's 40 years old now.
Exactly.
But it holds up just in the same way that I think cel shading and like 8-bit, 16-bit kind of sprites hold up.
Exactly.
Just perpetually. And it's more difficult to find, you know, they may be great RPGs or just great games in general. From like early 3D days, and they just don't hold up as well.
They don't.
Like, mechanically, they might make it, or vice versa. You know, maybe the mechanics suck, but it looks great because it's that kind of
cel
shaded.
Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't always like coalesce into a complete package. I think the ones that are going to do the best are going to be like cel shaded, sprite based RPGs.
Exactly.
Like, it's just easier to translate.
Which is, it's funny to see. So, obviously, full circle here, but...
Yeah, and I mean, you can also see in the gaming community, especially, like, the indie community, like, these kind of smaller games, or they look smaller, come back.
Exactly.
You know, you get, like, Pure Soldier and the Great Architects or something, which I really enjoyed, and it's like, that's... They did
little
Sega Genesis cartridges, but it
yep.
came out in, you know, like, the late aughts or something like that, 2010, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
So, it's like... Obviously, there's still a player base there, people who still, like, kind of love that genre and that look of things, you know, after all this time. Regardless
exactly.
of, like, consoles flopping or consoles making it or...
Controllers making it, controllers flopping it.
Yeah, it's like, even with all this stuff, whether it's a hit or a miss from, like, a hardware company, these games, depending on how they're styled, will make it.
Exactly. And if
and others will be forgotten, unfortunately.
And if styles are done right, they'll last. You always are going to know them.
Yeah, I think, like, Zelda Wind Waker, we didn't really touch on at the beginning of the podcast. Another cel-shaded one that I think holds up.
Yeah, exactly.
I did.
And what's
I have gone and played, like, Majora's
Mask. If it holds up, I love Majora's Mask. If it holds up, it's always brought back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's... I think people were, like, clamoring for, like, a new Borderlands, which we finally got last year.
That's what I mean. They were bitching about it, but they loved it so much because it brought back...
They were bitching about it before the first one came out. As soon as it launched, people liked it. They knew what it was. But even though they've done, you know, like, the Handsome Jack collection, and they, you know, kind of did, like, a refresher. And this is more mechanics-wise than how it looks. For, like, the original Warlands, and people played crap out of them. They streamed them, they played them,
too.
They were playing them with friends, they were playing with viewers, you know, whatever. Yeah, Telltale's coming back very quickly.
Exactly.
So it's like, obviously, people want those kind of games and how they look, you know. I think with Telltale, they got in over their heads a little bit, and they just didn't have a good engine to base stuff on. So it was, like, gameplay stuttering and stuff, and frame rate drops.
But if you think about it, though...
Which will ruin a story.
They remembered them, so they brought them back.
They did, yeah. And there's some heavy hitters in there, like you brought up. You talked about, like, The Walking Dead. And,
exactly.
We talked about the new patch to Batman, and you could even throw in Tales
Jurassic
from the
Park,
Borderlands. And those weren't cel-shaded, actually. The Bitches. Old Telltale games weren't.
Oh, okay, we won't talk about those. Just forget what
yeah. Wolf Among Us.
Yep, Wolf Among Us, there you go.
One. Tales from the Borderlands was really good. But yeah, they had some heavy hitters in there, and I think people just didn't want it to go away.
Yep.
So even though the company was probably mismanaged and they didn't listen enough to players, they might have even had people there, actually, like, asking for it, too, to get a better engine to make it mechanically better so that it could last longer, run on a better engine. But art style-wise, I think it'll hold up.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
And I hope that they just do that. It's like with this new company, or even much hopefully, further down the line, that they figure out how to kind of fix that aspect of it, or they remaster them. Mm. And I think those remastered versions will be the ones that'll hold the test of time.
Exactly.
They'll just port those over and over and over again.
Oh,
They function now. They run smoothly. You're not going to have a frame rate drop, and then the art style is going to hold up. So exactly. You can play it, 20 years from now, the PS8 or whatever, PS7, it's like...
PS25, you know.
Yeah, people won't complain about it, but I think you could probably get another, walking simulator that is more, like, 3D, and I don't think it'll hold up. Yeah, I think people might remember it fondly, but I don't think you'll be able to play it as easily.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I think that's kind of a wrap. Yeah. And I did, like a...
Big full circle.
Yeah.
We 360'd it.
Oh! And we talked about the 360. I never thought I would... this is just, like, off the cuff, but... would take part in a podcast or discuss, like, the Atari Jaguar TurboGrafx.
Fun memories.
Such weird consoles. There's some weird ones out there.
Housekeeping!
Yeah, so we'll wrap up with some housekeeping if you've stuck with us in our ramblings. last episode I brought up that we're available on a multitude of platforms. So hopefully you've tried to take advantage of that. If you missed out for whatever reason on that little spiel, we are now available on iTunes, YouTube. CastBox is our hosting website, so you can still get us there. As well as Google Play Music and Spotify.
We're expanding, folks.
Yeah, we kind of got the big five under control. So,
We're expanding, obviously, our tiny little paws are getting into little crevices.
We're trying to, yeah. And also, like I brought up last episode, my next big goal for the podcast is podcast directories and then other podcast hosting services. So if you use something very specific podcasting-wise, we want to be available to you on there as well. So you don't have to change anything up or try to find us in a more obtuse kind of way. So, and the long-term goal is that Rage Quit will be on Patreon.
Yep, hopefully soon.
It'll be free to listen to still, but if you want to listen to it early, the plan is you can listen to it a week early or something.
We'll be Patreon-ing.
Yeah, or a few days early or something along those lines. And I found out, too, there's actually a podcast that I listened to via Patreon, and it works great as a podcasting app. I didn't realize. I play it through there.
Oh, okay. I didn't know
so
that.
You can have the Patreon app, and then you can check through, all the people that you subscribe to or pay money to and stuff, and then you can see their, announcements. And then if they are, a podcasting one, the one I listen to, you can post the link there. Okay. And then listen to it. So if you're big into Patreon, look forward to that in the future.
Yeah, we'll be expanding on the horizons.
Yeah, and podcasting is going to be a main focus.
All right. Well, as always, I'm Ariel Schultz.
And I'm Anthony Schultz.
Follow that bear.
Peace, homies. Hey there, guys. This is Anthony Schultz, one half of the duo for Rage Quit. I just wanted to spend a minute or two, at most, talking about Ariel and I's other endeavors or where you can follow her and I, if you're a fan of this podcast. So I'm most prolific on Twitter as far as social media is concerned. I share more kind of gut reaction or private, experiences and opinions there. I'm at Anthony R. Schultz, pretty easy to remember, just my name. And if you'd be so inclined, you can give me a follow, and I also drop Rage Quit links there every week, and other things that Ariel and I are both working on. AS Inquisitor also streams, which is the production company that produces Rage Quit, essentially myself at the moment, and I stream 5 days a week. I'm a variety streamer, so I do a little bit of everything. Hopefully, there's something there that you would really enjoy, even if it's just one day a week. I take every Thursday and Friday off, and you can follow and or subscribe at twitch.tv/ASInquisitor. All these links that I'm mentioning will be in the description box below, and I will reiterate. Also, AS Inquisitor has a YouTube channel. So if you're not listening to this podcast via YouTube, if you're using your preferred podcast provider,
This podcast does make its way to YouTube. We will eventually be recording not only our voices, but also ourselves when we do the podcast. We're just working on some equipment issues right now. But we also have past streams that I've done for AS Inquisitor that have a little bit more kind of polish or pizzazz to them. They're divided up into like better bite-sized chunks for complete game playthroughs or Let's Plays. There's also a lot of unique content there. I record things throughout the week as I play games, just kind of funny moments or maybe even like personal achievements, things of that nature. And so you can search for AS Inquisitor on YouTube. And again, the link will be in the description below. But those are my three kind of primary platforms that you can find me on. So that's Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch. Ariel actually has her own YouTube channel called Painting with LM Schultz. She's a very talented painter. She has her fine arts degree and enjoys painting for cathartic reasons, as well as to improve on her like technical prowess. So she started her own YouTube channel to improve on her techniques, as well as show people kind of some basics or things that you can do painting wise. There's also some other kind of crafty do-it-yourself kind of ideas and videos on there as well that pertain a little bit more personally to her and I. Because they usually involve our family. You know, it's a family project that she's working on. For example, she did our son's Halloween costume. And so she walked through how she constructed and created, you know, the costume and how you could do something similar for your kiddos at home. And then finally, you can follow Ariel on Twitter as well. She is primarily on Twitter, just like myself. We don't really indulge in too many other social media platforms, save for maybe Instagram. I don't think we're as active on there. Ariel might be, more so than myself. But you can follow her at @merhobbit and give her a follow as well. And that's my lovely co-host and beautiful wife, Ariel. But anyways, I just wanted to stop in and kind of throw some links your way. And if you were curious about what AS Inquisitor was doing and how Rage Quit kind of fit into that ecosystem, there it is. Yeah, got all the links for you. If you're interested in any one of those, all of those links are going to be in the description box below, and they're going to be in every podcast episode now. So I'm not sure if they're entirely there right now, but I'm going to be doing a fresh write-up and make sure and have all of those included for you. So just click a link or copy and paste and head on over if any of those strike your fancy. But anyways, thanks for enjoying the show. Really appreciate it. We'll be back next week for more rage quittiness. And as always, follow the bear. And have a good evening, guys.